Sound Magic here every Saturday afternoon on CFRU. Seriously, music.
Keep your eyes open and CFRU 93.3 FM proudly present Baby Eagle and the Proud Mothers at the E-Bar on Sunday, April 10th. Former Constantine Stephen Lamke returns to Guelph with a band featuring Shotgun Jimmy and members of Attack in Black. Local folk rock hero Richard Laviolette opens this all-ages licensed show, which begins early at 8 p.m., and it's going to end early, too. Tickets are only available at the door and are $6 with a non-perishable donation for the Guelph Food Bank and $8 without. All proceeds benefit Out on the Shelf, Guelph's Queer Library and Resource Center. And for more information, please visit vishkana.com. Again, Baby Eagle and the Proud Mothers, Richard Laviolette, all playing early at the E-Bar on Sunday, April 10th. See you there. It's grown.
I'm talking with Mike Smith from Ignatius Farm CSA. And Mike, I wonder if you could talk about the crops that you grow on the CSA and what the most popular and in-demand crops by the shareholders that you have would be.
We grow several different types of crops, I'd say, in the range probably about maybe 40 to 50 different types of vegetables. And of that, we're around probably a couple hundred different varieties of all those different types. So not necessarily 200 different types of tomatoes, but we'll grow probably at least, say, something like 40 to 50 different types of tomatoes, for example. In terms of the popularity of particular crops, I mean, tomatoes is obviously, maybe not obviously, but it's a popular one among many people. Garlic is really often a seasonal thing, too, because it's a community-shared agriculture program. Our clients get what's in season. So in the springtime and the early parts of the summer, strawberries are probably one of the most popular items. While, you know, later in the fall, things more like maybe onions and potatoes, squash, things like that are more popular when there aren't strawberries to choose from.
Could you describe the logistics of how a CSA works?
Sure. A CSA is, the acronym is Community Shared and or Community Supported Agriculture. And the logistics is more or less shareholders or sort of members of a community who want to participate pay a portion of the cost of the vegetables for the season up front at the beginning of the season. So we take a $100 deposit and then pay the residual amount of your share over the next few months. In June, or the end of June, we have those shareholders come back to the farm once a week. And at that point, they go through in our little farm store. They see all the different vegetables that are part of the share that week. And at that point, they sort of do their little tour around the store and take the allotments of what particular crops are in season that week. The CSA program, at least our CSA program, is 20 weeks long. So those same people come back once a week for 20 weeks. In addition, we have U-Pick options as well. So we have U-Pick strawberries, tomatoes, beans, peas, flowers. So it's a way for people in the community not only to connect with their food by going to the farm and seeing that, meeting the farmers that are growing their food, but also if they choose, they can get their hands dirty and go and pick a little bit of extra of some of those crops when we have a ton of them in demand and don't have the time on our hands to pick every possible pea that's out there.
All right, an on-farm workout, as it were.
I've always joked around we should advertise amongst the gyms out there. If you want your workout, come and pick some veggies. We do a work share program, so as as well, if you don't have the finances or don't want to pay for your fee, pay for your share one particular year, you can come out and we will teach you the hands-on how to harvest vegetables and how to do some of that preparation work in terms of weeding and transplanting. And you can get the express learning on how to do some of these things in brief.
Has that worked out for you?
For the vast majority of cases, it works out pretty great. Last year, we had about, I'd say probably around 10, 12 individuals that instead of paying for their share will come out, depending on how much vegetables they want, whether they want a half share or a full share, dictates to how much time they have to put in over the course of the season. And that way they get the food, and which is essentially, you know, the fruits of their own labor because they've come and helped out at the beginning as well as throughout the season to grow it.
It's very interesting to see the iterations of CSA that you're talking about, because I used to be a CSA grower in the 90s, and it was very much more the standard you pay up front or for quarterly payments and then you get your allotment. But now you're talking a diversity of how it actually can function and to address different needs of your shareholders.
For sure. And a community is a diverse place. And I mean, the whole model of paying up front takes some of the risk off the farmer because you don't have to pay, you know, you don't have to take out a bank loan to buy your seeds and get your labor all started off up front. But this particular model, we've learned that there's several people in the community that may not be able to afford a few hundred dollars in, you know, one lump sum because you may be living more paycheck to paycheck. So by having these other options, we try to help facilitate to make it a more accessible system for people.
How many shareholders do you have?
Currently, we have 275 shareholders in the summertime. That's how many we're crop planning for right now. And we are aiming to do around 60 winter shares. So that a winter share is the same idea. However, you come twice rather than every week, and we give you a big bulk amount of your storage crops.
Okay. So, and that's a very large CSA. I think compared to most, that would be a very large CSA.
We are on the sort of, yeah, medium to large size compared to several other ones in the region.
As far as the Ignatius Jesuit Center, how is the CSA linked up with that?
Okay, so the Ignatius Jesuit Center is where I work. It is a 600-acre property just north of the city of Guelph. The 30-second history lesson for folks out there that haven't been up to the farm, it was established about 100 years ago by Jesuits, which is a denomination of Roman Catholic priests. It was set up as a novitiate, a training school where men could go to learn to become priests. In the last several decades, that has not been as a popular profession to go into. And over the years, they've gone through several changes on the property. And one of the most recent is about 10 years ago, they were interested in using the farmland that they had there that used to go to feeding the Jesuits that were living there. And so the farm has sort of gone through this transition of starting a community shared agriculture program. So the Community Shared Agriculture Program at the Ignatius Jesuit Center of Guelph is one of the pillars in the different enterprises that operate on the property, which also include general land rental to other organic farms, or other organic farmers, I should say, community gardens. There is Loyola House, which is an opportunity for people from all over the world to come and do Ignatian-based spiritual retreats on the property. And people from all over the world come to the IJC to participate in those. The old school where Jesuits used to learn has been converted into office buildings. And that office building is called Orchard Park. And in Orchard Park, we have the Canadian Center for Mental Health, I believe, is there. We have the Terra Group, which is a grouping of students from high schools from all over the separate school board who come up for a semester and learn about all sorts of things in their classroom there. There's other not-for-profits and businesses that are based out of there, such as FarmStart, the Ecological Farmer Association of Ontario, Canadian Organic Growers, the Organic Council of Ontario. So there's a lot of different synergies that are happening up there right now, right, particularly around local food.
We neglected to ask this, but this is, I guess, an important one logistically. What on a weekly basis, what would a share price be for somebody who wanted to become a shareholder at Ignatius Farm?
So we have two sizes of shares. If you're more of a big veggie eater, we have a regular share, and that goes for $695. And we have a smaller share, and that goes for $425.
Okay. Now, this is an annual cost.
This is an annual cost. So I don't have my little timetable in front of me of what the actual payment is. For either size share, we ask for a $100 donation up front to say, hey, I'm interested in doing it. And then we have a little chart for when, the depending on what size you're getting, when those next allotments are done. We're also we're a little bit easygoing. I don't want to say easygoing, but like we're open to be flexible in terms of those dates. If you are in a financial position when you can't make a particular deadline, we're open to being in flux with that somewhat.
So Mike talks about the shares that he has, the two different types of shares at Ignatius Farm CSA, and the fact that they have different, I guess, packages for different requirements for people, a regular share being close to $700 a season, a smaller share being $425 a season, and they ask for money up front, a deposit of $100. If you go onto their website, ignatiusguelph.ca/CSA, you can navigate through it, and you will see that they have a brochure which explains this and how the share prices are. And what is really interesting is that you see an anticipated harvest from June through October. So in June, they start off with strawberries and lettuce, progressing in July to things like peas and zucchini and beets. In August, they have beans and tomatoes, cucumber, eggplant, squashes. September, they start to get melons. And then in October, of potatoes and carrots and pumpkins and root crops for storage. So quite a diverse selection. And what is really interesting when you listen to that interview, the first part, is that Mike talks about having 40 to 50 different varieties of tomatoes. And I guarantee you will not find that in a typical supermarket. So in this next section, Mike is going to talk about the internship programs that they have at Ignatius.
Can you tell us what some of the significant successes you've had with the CSA?
One of the biggest successes I find with our particular CSA is our internship program. At Ignatius Farm, we offer an internship program that is, I guess, threefold. There's three different sections to it. One is a senior internship position. So this is a position for someone who has worked on an organic farm for at least a year. And we try to, and as a farmer, we mentor those people and to try to help to continue to develop those skills and give them additional responsibilities to another one of our positions, which is a novice intern. And so this is a position for someone who has never been to a farm before, more or less. It's like you really wet behind the ears. It's how I was when I first got involved in agriculture. I did the novice internship at Ignatius Farm back in 2003. And from there, you learn, what the kohlrabi plant looks like and how to seed and transplant, weed, harvest, post-harvest handling. And the educational program consisted, in addition to being part of an organization called CRAFT, which is the Collaborative Regional Alliance of Farmer Training, in which is an organization of, it's more of a grouping of other organic farms that offer an educational internship program in southwestern Ontario. Currently, I'm the rotating the coordinator of this group, and we work together as farmers to offer a field trip once a month with the other interns from all the different craft farms within our area. So all the interns get together, get in the car, drive to another craft farm, and meet other people that are doing a similar internship on another farm, see how a different farm, maybe does some things a little different, does things a little bit the same, but it makes them feel part of that broader community of people that are interested in learning about organics. We also offer various types of workshops and field trips beyond that at our particular farm to help diversify the educational experience that our interns are getting.
So that really leads me to a question that I had about the whole aspect of people becoming involved in agriculture. And certainly at this conference, this has come up. Less people are choosing agriculture as a profession than before. And yet you've got these organizations like FarmStart and FarmLink. And then you talk about your own internship program. How do we as a society encourage people to choose agriculture as a profession and make it a sustainable transition so they don't have to work a 40-hour week off-site of the farm?
It's a big challenge. I don't have an easy answer for that. From young farmers that I've spoken with over the years, the two big obstacles in the way of a young person getting involved in agriculture today is access to affordable land and essentially being able to make a living doing it. Several people I know will have started off this process of doing an internship and wanting to take more responsibility and get involved in it more, but because of those two big obstacles, it's a challenge for them to say, I'm going to quit my day job and actually take a risk and do this. A place like Ignatius is wonderful, the fact that I'm an employee of the Ignatius Jesuit Center of Guelph, and I don't have to worry about paying, a mortgage and all these other high overhead costs with my particular experience. In terms of trying to, I guess you said about making it accessible, or how do we convince people to do it?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the average age of a farmer right now is about 65, 60 years old. I might be a little off on that, but the last
It's old. It's up there anyway.
Yeah, and I find it particularly interesting in terms of that demographic is that it's generally an older white male profession that the average farmer is in Canada right now. However, in terms of new farmers, and we're looking at that demographic, predominantly it's women who are post-secondarily educated between 25 and 35. So it's almost, in some respects, you know, a very different demographic of what farmers currently historically are. And when we see numbers like average farm income being, you know, negative $10,000, right, negative $15,000, it's really depressing to a lot of young people who have grown up on family farms and have that experience, you know, seeing their family, you know, trying to flip a buck, you know, growing corn or soy or something and saying, you know what, I want nothing to do with this at all, because the pattern I see from my family is that it's a whole lot of work and you're not making any money. And so the passion that I see year to year with different groups of interns and volunteers that come and work, a lot of people are looking for something more than a job. They're really looking for a lifestyle change. And so it's trying to get away from that 9-to-5 and doing something like an internship or something really gives them that opportunity to be part of something bigger than you know, working at Walmart or just some office job. So in terms of finding an idea in order to train everybody to come to learn more about farming, there's a lot of these little things in terms of getting it as a sustainable career for people to choose. It's a big question that I don't necessarily have an answer to, but I think it involves essentially communities and governments taking responsibility and choosing with their dollar where they want to support their food system.
So very interesting to see that... the age of farmers, while it is increasing overall in this country, the people that are actually entering the farming profession are young, and they're well-educated young women, typically. I'm just looking at some of the census information in 2007 for agriculture in Canada, and there was a loss since the 2001 census, so in a six-year time, of nearly 20,000 Canadian farmers from all farming sectors. And the number of farmers under 35 is less than 10% of the Canadian population. The overall average age of Canadian farmers, overall average age is 52. So it's interesting because urban consumers, we might think that the same amount of land is being cultivated and that Canada's agriculture sector is doing fine, especially when you see that wheat prices, soybean prices are quite high, food prices in general have increased. But losing 20,000 people in just 5 years in agriculture is going to have a tremendous impact on Canadian agriculture. So when we look at the whole aspect of CSAs and the benefits of a CSA, certainly having 20 weeks of fresh seasonal produce is fantastic. And the variety, over 60 varieties of vegetables and fruits, and within those vegetables and fruits, tremendous diversity within them, something that you won't see in the grocery store. And if you look at those benefits, in and of themselves, they're enough, but certainly knowing your family's farmer, much like you would know your family doctor or your family lawyer or your teacher, family farming, knowing the people that are actually producing your food is important and quite relevant. So in this last section, Mike's going to talk about diversity being insurance for a CSA operation and some of the logistics of their operation at Ignatius CSA.
So on a day-to-day basis or over the course of a growing season, what are the biggest challenges that you face? And I guess one of the ones that when I was a CSA grower is, how understanding are your shareholders when a crop failure does occur, if it does occur?
Luckily, so far, I haven't had any major crop failures thus far in my farming career. I've been farming for about 8 years now. I mean, 2 years ago, the farm I managed, which was not Ignatius, was a different farm, but we had a major crop failure on tomatoes, for example, and it was due to something called late blight. It's a fungal blight. It was most likely the cause of the potato famine in Ireland back in the like 1890s, 1850s, something like that. And how do I deal with that? I believe the Ontario Ministry of Food and Agriculture, OMAFRA, was recommending at the time that, you know, farmers preemptively spray fungicide every few days on their tomatoes to prevent this from happening. As an organic farmer, I don't have that option.
Right.
So it's a challenge for sure. And this year, I might have that same challenge again, but I might have a completely different challenge. So for me, initially, in terms of being prepared for the challenges, a lot of that has to do with weather and climate and some of these other diseases and pest issues.
Now, you have a rotation, though, of course, in place.
Absolutely. And we just have about under 20 acres that we farm as part of the CSA model. And I'd say close to half of that at any given time is under cover crops. So that's essentially a green manure. So we're planting something like buckwheat or winter rye or red clover, some green crop that we grow for the sake of absorbing nutrients from deep down in the soil and taking nitrogen out of the air, such as from legumes like soy or cowpea or something like that. And by tilling that back into the ground, we're helping to build that soil and bring those nutrients close to the topsoil so that the crops that we're going to plant into that in the near future can easily access those nutrients.
Well, certainly, I guess that's one way that you incorporate sustainability into your operation because you don't have that pesticide option available to mm-hmm. you as a certified organic grower. Are there other methods that you utilize to incorporate sustainability into the CSA?
I mean, I find the word sustainability pretty tricky because it means a lot of different things to
Very
a lot of different
term,
people.
No doubt.
Especially in the last few years, it's been floated a lot more by a lot of different people in a lot of different industries with a lot of different interests. So it's becoming a little bit watered down. And you know, maybe 5 years ago, I could use the word a little easier. I guess my position is, generally speaking, thus far, I don't think humans are a sustainable species. It's a little harsh, and I don't know what that means. But to date, I haven't seen a whole lot of like a broad cultural kind of thing of our species really doing a lot of things sustainably. That being said, I think that it's a good goal for us to be aiming towards. And the smaller my ecological footprint that I can have, I think the better that will be on my local community, my local environment, and the food that I'm producing. Economic sustainability, I mean, I need to be able to not only, you know, support myself, but the people I work with need to do that too. And as a community, if we want to have, you know, food systems close to us that we can trust and that we want to support, I mean, we need to sustainably vote with our dollars and support those systems when we have those opportunities. So as trying to be sustainable, a sustainable operation for me means trying to have the least impact on, at least negative impact on my soil and my environment while trying to maximize the positive things like healthy food, education, and trying to financially be able to, you know, do it again this year and next.
Now, you mentioned that you farm 20 acres for the CSA specifically. Mm-hmm. How many people would you say are involved in the actual production on that 20 acres?
Well, in terms of employees that we have, I mean, there's myself and there's another gentleman who managed the CSA this past year. In addition to that, this past year we had 7 apprentices. Two of those being the senior positions and the others being more of those novice positions. So on that first look, you could say there's easily 9 people that are putting in the majority of their say 50, 60 hours a week out there working. And then in addition to that, you have, you know, volunteers, you have working share members, you have different tour groups and things like that. Often if anyone wants a tour, I'll say I'm more than happy to give you a tour for an hour. But then if I'm going to help you out to give you a tour, then you're going to help me out for an hour and get your hands dirty for a little bit. And often that's a great barter that works well for both of us.
Okay. I just find it very interesting because what you're talking about essentially is one person for about two acres, essentially, or a little over 2 acres.
Yeah, and one of those acres is in cover crops, so there's not a whole lot of things happening.
So it's almost a one-to-one ratio, one person, 1 acre, in essence.
To a degree. It's one of those, in terms of looking at the numbers like that, I find depending on experience level, you could probably bump that up a little bit or bump that down a little bit.
Right. I guess the point I'm trying to get at is, though, this is very intensive horticulture, agriculture, if you want to put it that way. And when we look at the word culture, we'll look at the number of people that are actually involved in farming that particular acre. And mm-hmm. that's what I find really interesting when you compare or large-scale agriculture, whether it be conventional or certified organic, you look at the numbers. It's quite an interesting stat, especially when you think about the proximity of Ignatius Farm CSA to the city of Guelph. I mean, it's right
there.
We're
on the other side of the county line.
That's it. Right on the other side. And Mike's absolutely correct. Ignatius Farm CSA is right on the other side of the county line. So, mm-hmm. I mean, people that you could bicycle from downtown Guelph and get your share if you wanted to.
Now, I live in just under a kilometer from downtown Guelph. So I bike 12 minutes from my house to the farm every day.
Now, what do you see as the future growth areas for your CSA? You mentioned education.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing conversation that we have frequently of, like, you know, where are we going? Where do we want to go? Education is, regardless of the department that we're talking about at the Ignatius Jesuit Center of Guelph, education frequently comes up as one of the core items. In terms of the practicality, right now we're going through a lot of conversations on what that future growth might look like, and at this time I can't really talk about which ones we're going to go with, but we're going to continue to grow great local healthy food and continue to teach people how to do it.
I find the aspect of how many tomato varieties, 50 or 60, you said?
It's around 50, yeah.
You cannot get that in a grocery store. Even if you went to some of the specialty stores, I defy anybody to find 50 varieties of tomatoes in that store. So that has got to be an attraction for your shareholders.
I think it is. Personally, I have a real attraction as a hobby even to preserve heirloom varieties and things like that, because seed availability and biodiversity we know is decreasing every year. And because of things like we mentioned earlier about late blight as a way of, it totally decimates your tomato crop.
Right.
So for me as a grower, the best way of me to be prepared for those challenges in the future, whether it's going to be a hot year, a dry year, a really wet year, or a really dry or cold year, is to diversify the amount of, varieties or types of crops that I have. So if it's going to be a really cold, wet year, you know what? Sorry, guys, it's not going to be a tomato year. We'll probably get some, but we're not going to have that huge, lush of tomatoes that we all kind of have a hankering for in the middle of August. But you know what? At that same time, it's going to be a really great greens year, because that's where greens thrive, which for us, it's one of the real benefits of a community shared agriculture model, is because of that diversity is built into inherently into that system. Regardless of what season you get, unless you're getting hail several times every weekend or something, or a tornado or something really devastating, you prepare yourself as well as you can to anticipate those future challenges.
Now, another aspect I think is important is for a lot of people, I'm sure they think, wow, this is a great model. I know my farmer, I know my grower, I know the plot of land where my food is being grown. This is fantastic. But the upfront cost, I think we talked about it, what is it worked out, about $25, $30 a week, something like that?
Depending on the size of share you get, yeah, it's somewhere between a $25 or a $30
which is
a week.
No different than going to the supermarket, I really don't think, or a farmer's market for that matter.
Which is what, I really think it's a model that in that respect that can work, because it is about what a lot of people will spend on average anyway. And if you're going to a supermarket and spending $25 a week on produce, are you spending that $25 on organic produce? Maybe, maybe not. And the other fact is, when was that produce even picked? And so a lot of nutrition the longer a product has been picked off of a plant, that nutritional quality starts to decrease as that freshness drops down. And so I've become a bit of a food snob, strictly because most of my diet, I'm eating things, at least during the peak of the season, that were picked, that day. So yeah. I'm getting a real nice deal that way.
We're going to have to start to VQA vegetables the way that we VQA wine. I think, estate bottled well, estate grown tomatoes. I think, it's coming. Maybe not next year, but in the future.
Well, Foodland Ontario, I'm under a loose understanding, and I may be totally off base on this, but I have heard through some grapevines that while there is the Foodland Ontario label, you might start seeing the Foodland Organic Ontario label as well.
Okay. As far as repeat customers, what would you say the percentage of your shareholders that you have right now have been shareholders previously and come back year after year after year?
I would have to check the numbers on that, actually, there, Walter.
Is it a large percentage?
It's over 50%, I can tell you right off the bat, and I want to say over 60% even, but I haven't looked at what the numbers are for next year, obviously, because...
Okay. People are transient, sir. They move, but...
Sure. I'd say probably on average it's around like 65%, but again, I haven't looked at the numbers because we haven't had this year, and since I've only been back at Ignatius this one year, I didn't have anything to compare it to immediately. But
that has to help, though, to know that you've got that percentage of people coming back.
Absolutely, and that's one thing for me. It's about quality and customer service in terms of making people happy, in terms of if they want to support your business. If they're not happy and they don't have a good experience, they're not going to want to. And